Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. This is the Blizzard Watch podcast. We're doing a show about Blizzard Entertainment and other companies sometimes and their various games. And I'm your host, I'm Matt. With me this week are my fantabulous co-hosts, Liz Harper and Joe Perez. I almost did a Halloween thing just then, and I managed to steer myself away from it. It's amazing how my brain can grab this terrible idea and go, Matt, do this. Like, why am I doing a Halloween thing now? It's almost Christmas. It's not Halloween.
You know, yeah, I was looking at the calendar today, and I'm like, it's like 6 days until Christmas? How did that happen?
When they were asking, do they know it's Christmas? The answer was no. No, they didn't know. Nobody knew. Someone still thinks it's March. I keep thinking it's March 2020. It keeps not being March 2020. It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, a lot of stuff to talk about, some of which is, I mean, it's stuff. I don't know. I find myself very confused with what happened today. Blizzard dumped whole bunch of coming World of Warcraft news, like including the schedule for 2024. Which, the schedule for 2023 is anything to be based on, means that they will probably hit all of these targets in a relatively speedy time. It also means that my fear that we were going to get another Mists of Pandaria situation seems to be fairly unjustified, because they got it all blocked out. I mean, they don't actually have dates for some of it. Like, there's no date yet on when Season 4 is coming in, but they definitely have it blocked out in the schedule. I was very surprised to see it. And I shouldn't have been, because didn't they do this exactly same thing last year? Like in 2022?
Yeah, they did with the 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, at the end of 2022, we got the 2023 roadmap, and we all, I think I can speak for everyone here when I say we all thought it was insane the amount of content they planned to put out and how rapidly they seemed to plan to put it out.
Yeah, the timing.
I was wildly skeptical. Blizzard has never maintained a strong, consistent content schedule. Again and again, they've talked about they want to get expansions out more regularly, they want to get content out more regularly, and again, they have failed to do it. And in the past year, they have come in with patches every 2 months, like clockwork. And every patch is not just a tiny patch, it's a big patch with new story, and new dungeons, and new... There's
class
so much stuff going on that I can't
gear.
Keep up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is simultaneously, I mean, heartening and a bit kind of astonishing that here we are a year after the first roadmap, and here's roadmap number two, and they've got the War Within right there on it.
Yeah.
So they're at this point, they've even got the beta. I guess it was the alpha. I'm not sure, but they have the open testing period for the War Within on the schedule.
I mean, this is just as an ambitious a schedule as the 2023 roadmap. Mm-hmm. This starts with Seeds Renewal 10.2.5 in winter 2024. Then it goes on to a mysterious surprise patch named 10.2.6.
With a skull and crossbones.
No information.
Yeah. Skull and crossbones.
No information, but a skull and crossbones. Then Dragonflight Season 4 and the War Within Alpha. Patch 10.2.7, Darkheart, the War Within Beta, War Within Pre-Patch, and the War Within itself, and then ending out the year with patch 11.0.5, and it's just, we're getting four patches this year, as well as a couple of new seasons, and an expansion. This is a wild amount of content, and it's at a very ambitious schedule.
Looking at this the way it is, they've got the 20th anniversary event within patch 11.0.5.
Mm-hmm.
That's therefore we know they are releasing the War Within, unless anything goes wrong. They're releasing it before the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the anniversary is November. I think we're looking at maybe around a September release date for War Within.
Yeah. September or October. It's got to be one of those two.
I think if it's October, that's going to push it a little close to the 11.0.5. But
the anniversary event is supposedly within that, so it would make sense.
Yeah.
You know, and keep in mind too that the first season one for Dragonflight took place like a week after Dragonflight launched. I think it was 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks. So if it holds, then The War Within will come out, 2 weeks will pass, and then they'll start their season one, which then mm-hmm. means you'd get at least a month before 11.0.5, because you have to have at least a month because stuff gets changed.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself wondering if that means that even like the September date starts to feel like the more likely yeah. one, the more probable one, just because of that time differential there. But it's like, looking at this, the fact that we're going to get Warbands, Dynamic Flight, and Guild updates all in the pre-patch
before which is due out.
Yeah.
It's listed as being due out this summer.
Yeah.
Summer 2024, I should say.
The next summer.
We're close to 2024, but we're not quite there.
Yeah, so there's a lot. There's a lot going on. The alpha and beta are both in the schedule. I still want to know what the deal is with the Skull and Crossbones. Like, is that going to be some special pirate thing?
Everyone I'm seeing talk about is thinking pirates. That's just seems like the universal assumption that it's pirates, but perhaps it is also heralding our own doom.
Maybe maybe it's finding out what happened with our favorite SI7 agent runner and his pirate significant other. We haven't heard from them in a while.
You know, I hope Anne Stickney is out there listening to this and laughing her ass off at our weird ideas.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Because
long time. Because we don't know Anne hasn't had weirder ideas than we've come up with.
Long time listeners know that Anne Stickney used to be here on the Blizzard Watch podcast for many, many years. And now is over at Blizzard and writing story. May have written this story in 10.26. And we want to know. We want to know these things. But
I can hear the cackling now.
No, I'm just imagining it.
Since you guys have kind of dragged poor Anne into this, sorry, Anne. I'm going to start mentioning some of the stuff in Seeds of Renewal, because that I think that's interesting to look as a jumping off point to season four. Mm-hmm. We know that we're done with the raids. There's not going to be any more raids. The Imidrasil mm-hmm. raid is the final raid. It's not the final right. content, obviously, but it's the final raid of this expansion. But we're going to have in 10.2.5, we're going to have a Dragon Isles epilogue. I no idea what mm-hmm. that is. The Reclamation of Gilneas, yep. Which means finally, we're going to get Gilneas to not be a disease-choked heckle.
We're going to see.
Yeah, what happens to Gilneas? We're going to find out. Dragon riding worldwide, so now you can just ride your dragons. I mean, you could ride your dragons before, but now you can ride your dragons with the better, you know, the different system, which is, keep in mind that Dynamic Flight is coming with the War Within for every mount, apparently, or at least every mount that's suitable to it. We're also going to get follower dungeons, which they've been testing on the PTR for a while. And that's coming in 10.2.5. I'm going to be upfront. I don't know what the Azerothian archives are.
I haven't heard much about it either.
I have a feeling that's something that Anne had a hand in. I'm just gonna guess.
But regardless, that's the kind of stuff we're getting. Then, of course, there's the mystery possible pirate patch. Then we've got, you know, season four, which is going to have the Dragonflight raids revisited, which is probably going to be similar to what we saw at the end of Shadowlands.
Blizzard has talked about how it's going to be a faded raid system. It's going to be existing raids with kind of some remixed mechanics. And I'm very interested to get in there and play that.
Yeah.
We should probably finish this raid tier first, but I'm very excited about season four.
Well, you know, you could still finish it then. So. But they're also going to have the new PvP and Mythic Plus seasons. But what I find interesting was new open world rewards, because we don't really know what that means exactly. We know what the world rewards are. We just don't know what the new ones are going to be.
I wonder if it means they're just going to kind of bump up the gear level you're getting, or give rewards that are higher gear level than what's available now to kind of get everyone sort of up to par, up to a certain gear level going into the expansion.
See, I thought that about that, but then I thought about the fact we're also getting Dark Heart in 10.2.7, which has the time running pandemonium. Does someone know what that is?
I have no idea what that is, but I desperately want to know. You know, I don't even want to know. I just want to play it. It sounds great.
Then there's the Harbinger quests, which I think are related to the War Within, obviously, since I think the Harbinger is the the Harbinger is the name Zalatath is using, I believe.
I think that has to be lead in to the expansion kind of question.
We've got Troll and Draenei heritage armor, which
finally.
Finally. At the same time, I'm kind of surprised that that's the duo you team up. Trolls and Draenei, like. You don't wear shoes either. No, you don't. It's a no shoes day in the heritage armor.
It seems a little weird that Blood Elves got their heritage armor really early, really, really early, one of the first ones. And now here we are at the end of the road with Draenei.
Yeah, and Troll is... Worgen and Goblins got it before them.
Yes, everyone got it before them. Everybody except Trolls. I literally think these are the last two races to get heritage armor. Am I right?
As far as I know, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, because a lot of heritage armor, the allied races got their heritage armor boom when they were reintroduced. Yeah. So, yeah.
And we've kept going backwards and ignoring the fact that trolls exist, even though they were a vanilla race. Now trolls are finally getting their heritage armor. It's great.
So, and the final thing that listed is the new holiday event. We don't know what the new holiday event will be because we don't even know when. My guess would be possibly the Love is in the Air stuff. But, I mean, who knows? We don't know when that's coming out.
This is due out in spring. And it does say new holiday event. It says a new holiday.
Well, it doesn't say that could mean a new holiday, or it could just mean a new event for a holiday. English doesn't work. It doesn't give you that kind of
certainty. It does depend on where you put the emphasis in that phrase. Is it a new holiday event, or is it a new holiday event?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's hard. That's a tough one.
But we've already covered what the War Within's pre-patch is bringing. I should mention that the War Within beta is listed being between Dark Heart and the pre-patch for the War Within. So at some point in late spring, early summer, we're going to get the beta. And it looks like the launch of the War Within itself will probably be at least a month, if not 2 months after the pre-patch. It's usually a month for pre-patches, right? That seems like...
I think that's about right.
But we don't know if that'll be the case this time. But
Blizzard... The other thing is Blizzard has been pushing very hard on a content cadence that's like everything has about 2 months between it.
Yeah, and that's the reason I'm thinking that might be what we got here.
And if you look at, you know, all of the major patches here, that does kind of fall into that cadence if you leave out 10.2.6.
Well, if you look at Season Renewal, then Season 4, then Darkheart, if you assume that Season Renewal, 2 months, Season 4, 2 months, Darkheart, 2 months pre-patch, 2 months, you know, that's the kind of muddiness of the area.
Yeah. We're still pretty early in the process, and I'm sure they have target dates for everything, but they, you know, you don't want to commit to a specific exact time.
Yeah.
But they've given us a pretty good sketch.
When it's this far out, if you start saying stuff like it'll be by this time, and then, you know, there's a testing bug that you can't see until you find it, you know, who knows? But I will point out that I wanted to quickly rake through the stuff coming with War Within, because we've talked about it before and we'll talk about it again. Some of it's so obvious stuff. The new zones, 4 new zones, 8 new dungeons, new raid, new PvP sessions, the Earth and Allied race. But they also talk about that they're going to have the hero talents. They're going to be there on launch, along with Delves and the campaign story. We've talked about Delves and hero talents before, but they released a preview of hero talents today.
Have you, I think it was yesterday, but yes. Yeah. there's a new preview of Hero Talents, and it is, have you examined this in depth, Matt?
I am looking at
you're
it.
You're the one.
Yeah, I've been looking at it kind of just since you said, hey, that, you know, so I've, for the past couple hours, I've been looking at it. Specifically, I've been looking at the mountain thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why wouldn't I? I'm going to look at the lights. Yeah. Paladin, please.
The broad picture here is that Blizzard released an early preview of 4 hero talent specializations. That would be the Sandland Death Knight, the Chrono Warden Evoker, the Lightsmith Paladin, I've got so many thoughts there, and the Mountain Thane Warrior. And they just put that out there with the entire talent tree early. It's a preview, could change. And I mean, I find it really interesting looking. I don't know all these classes that well, but I think it's interesting to see the kind of shape of these things. But yeah. What do you think about Mountain Thanes?
I mean, some of the stuff seems really great. Like for instance, lightning strikes, which is one of the first things you seem to get. I don't know exactly when this is a mock-up of a talent tree. It's not an actual talent tree, but looking at it, damaging enemies with Thunderclap, Revenge, Raging Blow, or Execute has a 10% chance to also strike one with a lightning bolt, dealing moderate nature damage. Lightning strikes occur 50% more often during Avatar. This is interesting because it ties in to the interesting conceit of each of these hero specializations is that they are available to 2 out of the 3 in the case of most classes of your regular talent specializations. So, for instance, the Mountain Thane is available to Fury and Protection Warriors. Arms Warriors get 2 others that they can access. And, you know, Prot gets one that Fury doesn't, and Fury gets one that Prot doesn't. And so there's talents have to work with at least 2, but not all 3 of the specs. They know Mortal Strike isn't going to be something that a Mountain Thane has. So they don't have to. It's an interesting way to design these classes so that they act like capstones, but they don't have to be a capstone for all 3 specs. And that means you can design in a more targeted way. Like the one I'm looking at here is Strength of the Mountain, which comes off of Lightning Strikes in the initial mock-up. Shield Slam damage increased by 20%. Bloodthirst and Rampage damage increased by 10%. And that's an interesting balance because for the Prot Mountain Thane, Shield Slam gets more of a damage bonus, but it's only one attack. You have only one attack that gets the bonus. Whereas for Fury, you've got Bloodthirst and Rampage. Rampage is the highest rage spender you have. It's a big damage ability. So it changes the focus of the ability. So Strength of the Mountain for a Prot Warrior is certainly, it's a threat gen. That's, you know, a 10%, 20% extra damage with Shield Slam. It's a big pop in the face to get something to focus on you. But having it be Bloodthirst and Rampage for the Fury Warrior means that it's also a really solid damage generator. At least it should be. We'll find out. Lots of times we think stuff's going to work and then it turns out it doesn't play nice with other things. But there's just a lot of interesting stuff. And the way they've got these things set up, there's an initial starting talent that seems to be the one that everybody has to take. Then you can go down 1 of 3 trees, as far as we can tell.
I believe in the end, you were going to unlock everything on these trees.
But initially, you can unlock them in different orders.
Yeah. Initially, everyone's going to get the Keystone talent, which is that first ability. And then you choose how you go down the path. And there are choice nodes where you could, you know, pick one or the other, or that have different effects for each class. And then
That's actually, I'm going to look in the center here and talk about that one.
It ends with a Capstone talent. Yeah, that's kind of the big thing.
Like, everybody's going to get Avatar of the Storm when they get down there. But if you look at this, like, there's Storm Shield and Storm Bolts, which you can pick 1 of the 2. And then there's, beyond that, there's another one, and it's Gathering Clouds and on Thorim's Might. Basically, the choice ones, the choice nodes, are basically kind of this, I want to say octagon? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, they're like this octagon shape. And then there's, like, the 2 options are in there. You can pick 1 of the 2. It's similar to, we have talents that do that now in the current talent system. Like, you go down and you click on a thing and it says, do you want to take this one? Or you want to take that one?
Yeah.
Overall, I mean, a lot of this is still, like, it's just vaporware right now. It's not anything, like, I don't have numbers for it. I can't run out and test it. But it looks interesting because it can focus on the specializations that can take it. And it doesn't have to be all-encompassing. And I think that's a really interesting class design. I'm curious to see this with other classes that have more options in general, like a class that can tank, heal, and DPS, like paladins. That's a different design thing than, you know, what a warrior is, where we have two DPS specs and a tanking spec. I'm really curious to see what we get with druids, like how it's going to work with druids. To a certain degree, I actually wonder if it'll just be too simple. The Sandlane Death Knight is kind of fascinating because it's setting up the Deathbringer as the frost and blood ability, the unholy and frost get riders of the apocalypse, whereas Sandlane is a blood and unholy specialization ability. So this is one that has to be good for tanks. The blood ones are Deathbringer and Sandlane. So they're this vampire thing. I mean, of course it works well for blood. It sounds like a blood idea, but it's interesting because blood and unholy are the two that feed off of it. It has to work with those two, but it doesn't have to work with frost, which wouldn't make sense. There's not a lot of cold attacks in a vampire, you know, other than the whole thing where some of them can make storms happen. So yeah, there's just a lot of interesting options to the design elements here. But I would really like to see more classes for it before I get too excited. I do like the Sandlane theme, though. I do find myself wondering what they're going to do. Chrono Warden, I know there's going to be some mages who are mad that they're giving time magic to evokers.
Well, I mean, evokers already have time magic, though.
Yeah, I know. So. But I know there's some who's going to be mad.
Yeah, but they're already mad. It's too late. I'm sorry.
They can now make peace with their warlock enemies over the things that they've lost.
Yeah, well, but I do think before we move on, and there's lots of other stuff we might want to talk about, I wanted to ask you about the Lightsmith. Like, what do you think about its design?
See, when I first looked at these, I ignored everything. And I, like, really dug into the Lightsmith. And by doing that, I think I initially had, like, an off-kilter impression of what these talent systems were going to be. Because of the four talent trees they previewed, Lightsmith is the only one with an active ability, I believe. Lightsmith starts off with an active ability that their first talent that you'll unlock as soon as you get into the War Within is an active ability called Holy Armaments. And Holy Armaments is you're gonna drop a holy armament on the ground, and one of your friends is gonna pick it up, and they're going to get a buff of some kind. They're either going to get a holy bulwark, which gives them an absorb shield for 15% of your maximum health and an additional 5% every 2 seconds, stacking up to 30%, are they going to get a sacred weapon. While wielding a sacred weapon, your spells and abilities have a chance to deal additional holy damage or healing. And so we have an active ability that's going to require a lot of, you know, thought to play around. There, you go down these trees and a lot of things interact with that initial holy armaments ability. Like, after Holy Armaments, you can pick up a talent called Solidarity, where if an ally picks up an armament, you also gain its benefits, which I'm going straight there. Straight there. I think that'll be great. But it does require, you know, it's another active ability. It's going to require some serious effort to play around. You are going to have to think about, okay, who in my group is going to get the most benefit from these particular buffs? Where do I place this on the ground for them to go get it? How do I inform them that, hey, this cooldown is up, I'm gonna put this down for you, you need to run over and grab it? Because actually it doesn't say what its cooldown is, but you can have two charges of it. So it's gonna be an interesting positional thing, and the buff Holy Armaments provides rotates between the defensive Holy Bulwark and the offensive Sacred Weapon. You don't have a choice there. It's going to flip back and forth each time you cast it, which holy paladins have a lot of that. It's a little frustrating when you just want to have control over what you're doing, but you have to time it right. So this is something that's going to require significant thought and optimization to make the most of it. And it's going to favor groups that are more organized, because an organized group is going to really min-max this, and a disorganized group is going to get much less utility from it.
Yeah, it does make you wonder, like, how we're going to see it used in, like, world first pushes and stuff.
I bet this is going to be really strong in World First because you've got these super optimized groups that are going to make the most of those two buffs. They're going to really plan it out to the second, and they're going to plan out who's going to get it and where it's going to be placed. They're going to have all of it mapped out in advance, and they're going to do the best you could possibly do with those buffs. Other groups, I don't know. It's something that's going to require some work, and that's a level of change to the playstyle that I do not see in these other specs. The best I can tell, they give you more abilities, they buff you in different ways, they buff your existing abilities and let you flex in this direction or that direction or give you some cool new thematic powers. But this is actually a pretty significant playstyle adjustment. You really have to think about this and play different to make use of it. So I'm like you said, I'm really curious to see what's next. Show me more of these. Are there more specs that are going to be like Lightsmiths? Or is Blizzard aiming more towards this, you know, passive buffing other abilities thing that we're seeing in a lot of these other talent trees?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I mean, it might also be dependent on like what roles the specializations work for. Since the Chrono Warden for augmentation and preservation, though, and it doesn't have that. So
yeah, I should add that Lightsmith is for Holy and Protection Paladins. So that's your healers and your tanks have this option to place down these holy armaments to buff themselves or others.
Yes. I was actually looking at the Evoker. But yeah, that pretty much. I mean, it didn't cover everything, but it's pretty much all we can really talk about because, like, this hasn't actually come out yet.
There's a lot going on here.
Yeah. There's also going to be this was the one I don't really understand, actually.
We should.
For Ashenvale is going to be stopping in Season Discovery?
No. Hang on. Now I have to bring up the post. It is the Battle of Ashenvale in... there have been some issues with the Battle for Ashenvale, and they're all about layering, because the Battle of Ashenvale is a big open-world PvP event. It's not a battleground that you go and queue into, but it's a lot like Alterac Valley. The whole point of this Battle for Ashenvale is you go to Ashenvale, you kill things in the zone to start this event, and when the event starts, you're out to claim enemy camps, kill enemy lieutenants and generals until you win the battle for Ashenvale. That's pretty much exactly like Alterac Valley, except instead of being, you know, an instanced battleground that you queue up for, it is a big open world event. And a big open world event means it has to contend with layering. And layering in Season of Discovery works a little differently than it does in other servers, because Season of Discovery realms are massive. They are letting these realms are so much bigger than vanilla realms. They are huge realms, and they're kind of making them work using layering. And I find it interesting in part that Blizzard has gone into this much detail about how the event has worked, which Ashenvale is an interesting zone because it has both the Battle for Ashenvale event, which goes on all the time. It doesn't start and stop at specific times. It's always, you can always be working on it. And it also has the Black Fathom Deeps raid, the new raid for Season of Discovery. So there are a lot of players in Ashenvale. There are a lot of big groups, lots of people coming and going. And the layer system is set up to, you know, when you get to a certain threshold, it'll spawn a new layer.
Yeah, it spins them up,
and start.
Right?
Yeah, it spins up a new layer and starts populating it. But as fewer and fewer players are available, it will retire a layer. And so imagine you're playing in Alterac Valley, and all of a sudden there are fewer players, so it retires the Alterac Valley layer you were on. Just think about how that would work. That's how Battle for Ashenvale has been working, because if fewer players are in the area, it can retire the layer you're on, send you to another layer where maybe they aren't as far along in the battle. Yeah, maybe they just finished the battle. Well, you lost all your progress.
Yeah,
you're
what you've been
split
doing
from your group
doesn't come with you.
Yeah, exactly. So, and they'd used this kind of system that sort of aggressively spun up layers and retired layers to, you know, the whole idea is to keep you in zones that are reasonably populated. It never gets too crowded or too laggy, but it also never gets too empty, so you can keep doing this event. But I kind of feel like that was maybe a little, the implementation was maybe a little flawed because the raid was in the same zone, so you are going to have these big groups
that
going,
pass
coming and going.
They're not there.
But leave quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not there to play, they're going to the raid. So
yeah.
That makes sense.
But yeah, what they're doing is they've sped up the progress on Battle for Ashenvale. Like, you're getting more reputation. Okay, I should do that the other direction. They're slowing things down. So they're slowing things down and they're making sure your progress transfers. They're adding some tech that's going to keep your progress with you. And they're also trying to, you know, slow down layers being spun up and layers being retired. The result is going to be that Battle for Ashenvale events won't be running as frequently when they could be pretty fast and pretty consistent, and they won't finish as quickly. But they're increasing the rewards for finishing one. So hopefully the system they're building will be, you know, you may have fewer opportunities to do Battle for Ashenvale, but you're much more likely to actually complete it without bugs that split you from your group in different layers, without bugs that cause you to lose all of your progress and objectives completion. What I really find interesting about this is how much behind the scenes they're talking about. Because Agrind went on the forums and said, you know, okay, we did this wrong, and this is what we did. This is why this bug is here. It's because we're retiring layers pretty aggressively to keep the population balanced. And this is how we're going to fix it. This is what we're doing. So if you're playing Season of Discovery, if you're playing Battle for Ashenvale, you should see a smoother experience soon or already. But I mostly think it's interesting that they really dug into this and they told us all of this. One of the things we're talking about in the pre-show was about how game developers don't always want to give you previews of things because... you know, people can be very critical. People can be mean. People can hang on to that stuff. But yeah, it's an interesting peek behind the scenes. So if you're interested in that stuff, go check out the Classic Season of Discovery forums and read that forum post by Agrind where he goes into a lot of detail about how layering works in Season of Discovery. Someone say something.
You covered it. I don't have anything to add.
Okay, so what did you? I could tell I was interrupting you. You wanted to talk about something else, so go ahead.
We talked about the retail roadmap, but they also released a classic roadmap at the same time. So it's not only did we get a retail roadmap, which was the same thing we got last year for 2023, we got a retail roadmap, but this time they've also given us a pretty ambitious classic roadmap.
Yep, including Season of Discovery stuff. I'm not sure. I think there's a level phases or level tiers or whatever they're calling them.
Yeah, they're level bands is what they're calling them. They're not kind of a traditional phase system, but they're level bands. But we're about to head into the end of Wrath of the Lich King Classic with Ruby Sanctum releasing, I believe, January 11th. And then we've got Season of Discovery phases. We've got the level 40 level cap will be coming early next year. WoW Classic Hardcore will be getting a self-found mode. Season of Discovery level cap will be increasing to level 50. Cataclysm Classic pre-patch. Cataclysm Classic launch. Season of Discovery level band going up to 60. Cataclysm Classic Rise of the Zandalari patch. Cataclysm Classic Rage of the Firelands patch. and ending out the year with a Season of Discovery endgame content rollout. So maybe by the end of the year, we'll be doing like 40-man raids in completely new reimagined raid zones. I don't know. But this is, again, really ambitious, and I don't think the Classic team has ever done something with this much content. This is an ambitious schedule.
I also want to point out, because it's kind of easy to miss, Cellfound mode is a really big change for World of Warcraft. Having World of Warcraft Classic Hardcore with a Cellfound mode means you can't group. You can't interact with other players at all, except maybe to fight them. I assume you can PvP them. But you can't form a group or trade with anybody but yourself. Like it's just you. You have no positive interaction with any other players. I don't even know if you can whisper to them. It depends on the game server and how the game decides to work on it. I don't know how they're going to implement it for Hardcore and Classic. But it is still interesting because it's a step further than most... than just hardcore mode in a World of Warcraft game to a hardcore mode where you can't even group. And that does also mean that you won't be able to do certain content. Like dungeons and raids will not be doable anymore. And that's weird.
I don't think they specified if it's going to go that far, if you can't do dungeons and raids.
Yeah. And that is something that I wish they would talk about because it's a big deal.
We don't have a lot of details about that. When they first released it, it was Cellfound is basically you are working by yourself as far as the items you have. You don't have the ability to trade. You can't use the mailbox, even with mail to yourself, as well as no auction house. So maybe they're just going on the kind of no trading, you can't just go and buy your power on the auction house. You can't just go and have a friend who gives you a bunch of gear. But it would be really weird to see a version of WoW without dungeons and raids.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think we'll need someone to explain. But just looking at the other stuff we've got on this list, you already mentioned a lot of it, but we've actually got the level bans for every Season of Discovery, and they're going 40, 50, 60, and then they're going to have endgame content updates, whatever those are, which certainly sounds like, possibly they're going to bring it in, like, with Molten Core first, and then... bring in the Onyxia raid, bring in Blackwing Lair, and so forth. For all we know, they're going to do each raid tier as its own patch. We don't know yet, but that's one possibility. It is a lot. You are totally right about that. The new runes, up to 60, there's going to be new runes. So we don't know if there will be new runes in the last one.
I mean, each phase that increases the level band is also adding new runes and a new raid. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the new runes are and because every patch is going to provide essentially new class abilities that could potentially modify the way you play.
Also, I want to mention this one. They're not going to do the thing they did in actual Cataclysm. Instead, Transmog is coming with the first patch. I think that's actually the pre-patch. You will be getting Transmog in WoW Classic as of... the pre-patch to Cataclysm Classic. I don't know. Assuming they're going to use the same event they used for Cataclysm. So it's going to have elemental invasion
as well.
That was worth running. So maybe it'll be worth running again. Yes.
Cataclysm Classic, late spring, Transmog, the most important feature that has ever been added to World of Warcraft.
Yes, I am in agreement. I'm going to throw this. Joe isn't going to talk much, so I'm going to throw this one to Joe.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to, they're going to start with the same transmog restrictions that they had then, or do you think they're going to bump them up?
That is a really good question. I don't know, because I don't remember if there was a technical reason for the original restrictions. But I kind of hope that they're not going to have those restrictions, because I think players should be sort of allowed to transmog and look however they want. I think loosening it was always the way to go. So I don't know. I can't remember a very specific reason, so I don't see why not.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever necessarily a mechanical limitation. They had said they were very specifically taking it slow because they didn't want to rush into it and end up doing something wrong. But I don't know. I what about you, Liz? What do you think?
I mean, one of the interesting things about Classic rolling out is that they, we've gone from the original launch where it's no changes at all, to a sort of a hybrid game, which tries to keep some of the conveniences that, players enjoy, tries to give us a classic experience, without while removing some pain points from the game. So I think the smart thing to do would be to, you know, drop the weird transmog restrictions and let players have fun with the system, because it's a fun system. Don't tie your hands. Let us transmog. More transmog.
It would be interesting to me to see if they remove the restrictions on legendaries. Mm. Because Cataclysm, I want to say Valinir was a Wrath legendary, correct?
Valinir was Wrath. That was Old War.
So you could basically transmog to your Valinir and just keep the transmog, which a lot of people mm-hmm. would probably want to do.
It's cool.
If they put that in. If they don't put that in, then, you know, so we'll see what they're going to do. We also have account-wide collections as one of the features. Quite frankly, I don't see why those weren't in WoW Classic from the beginning, but yeah, I think that's a good move too. Overall, I think it's interesting. I mean, obviously, I'm hoping they cut back the snorkel noise from Worgen. As somebody who played Worgen throughout Cataclysm, I sounded like I had a head cold from heck. It was crazy. I was just like all the time. Like, my dog doesn't sniff continuously, guys. Wolves don't just wander around constantly smelling everything. They do that when they want to be tracking something. It was weird. But yeah, I don't, you know, I've nothing to say about goblins. I think they had a pretty good starting experience. I think Worgen did too. Unfortunately, they had the second half of their starting experience given to undead in a move that I found confusing. That's obviously not going to change. But yeah, this is a ton. I don't know if people want to hear us sit here and go over all the stuff coming in Cataclysm, but I will say that it's interesting that they have the Rise of the Zandalari and Rage of the Firelands patches both in autumn, between summer and autumn of 2024. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. I wonder if they're adopting, it feels like they're adopting the retail scheduling. Looking at this, there's a lot more stuff in this, but it's for different things.
Like
the Season of Discovery and then just regular Cataclysm Classic, which those two things are not the same, so you won't have to worry about them overlapping.
It's very ambitious. I keep saying it's very ambitious, but it is very ambitious. There's a lot of content coming out here. And while this is classic, it's like, oh, we've already seen all this, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Season of Discovery is really its own game that they're taking in different directions, adding new content, new abilities. Cataclysm is its own thing that they're, you know, refining the original Cataclysm experience. And even Hardcore is its own thing. That's a unique kind of gameplay. That's servers they're specifically maintaining just for this particular set of players. And this is essentially three games they're running in parallel. And there is a lot of content coming to all of them. I guess Hardcore is a little left out because all that's on the schedule next year is the self-found mode coming.
But people are doing Hardcore. They don't really want it to be like trying to innovate. They want it to give them that experience.
They crave consistency.
Yeah. Well, they want to, you know, they're already going to be in a situation where, you know, you die, you're done. So it's possible they don't want to have to also relearn new things the way that the Season of Discovery
it's
does.
It's true.
But there's actually some other stuff to talk about besides all this, which is a lot, quite frankly.
So much.
That turned out to be way more than I thought it was going to be. I do want to mention, because Liz mentioned it, that there's a free dragon mount or something. It's a free mount in the Diablo 4 shop.
He's horse, right?
Yeah. It thought it was a horse, but says Dragon's Path.
He's so horse.
Yeah. But regardless, there's free.
Dragoons.
Free, yeah. Free mount. You can get it. The Dragoon's Path. Okay, I misread that. That makes sense. There we go.
It's a two zeros. I mean, they two say O's. It's a holiday mount, but you know, it's not as cool as the dragon riding mount you can currently get for Winter's Veil, which you know, gives your dragon antlers and a red nose, because I'm sure your dragon does not find that belittling at all.
Well, I mean, you know, he didn't have to put it on. But yeah, I still actually like the tabard thing on this. It's got a nice white surcoat over its armor, and then a nice red mm-hmm. tabard underneath the saddle, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. And the mount trophy is also cool. There's like a scroll with like weird writing. Apparently that weird writing just says werewolf over and over again, by the way, guys. If you ever like see the weird writing that they put on stuff in Sanctuary in Diablo 4, it's just the word werewolf repeatedly, apparently. So there's that. That's a free mount. So, you know, if you're playing Diablo 4, log on and get yourself. Yeah. There's also, And the Amazon Prime Gaming Reward, which is the skeleton horse in Diablo 4, that's through the 18th, so of January, not of the 18th of December.
Yeah, yeah, that's
because that was yesterday.
Yeah, because of
yeah, it's the 19th, right? Don't do this to me, brain.
It is
as of the time of this recording, it is the 19th.
Yes, okay. Woo, whew, okay. But you can get that until next month around this time, so you've got a month left to go and watch various. Amazon Prime Gaming. It's just there, or you have to actually watch something.
The Amazon Prime Gaming is where you just, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you just go get it, you claim it. It's the Twitch things that are, you have to go watch a lot of Twitch to get them, which is kind of confusing because Amazon owns Twitch and there's some overlap there.
Yeah, I keep seeing the Amazon Prime stuff when I log into Twitch. So it's very
confusing. Yeah. This you just have to go click a button as long as you're already a Prime subscriber.
I think the Overwatch Winter Wonderland started today as we're recording.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously, WoW Wintervale started last week on the 16th. So
yeah, just know. A few days ago.
So there's all that.
I love wandering around Azeroth, and there are just candy canes and trees everywhere and decorations. I think that's what I like most about holidays in Azeroth is just. Yeah. They go all out on the decorations. I walked into the bank in Veldraken today, and it's like there's a pile of gold over there, and now there are candy canes stuck in the pile of gold. It's like a festive pile of gold.
festive loot. I still remember that the first time we saw a Santa hat on Lord of the Bear. Like, why is he wearing a hat? So yeah. But that's,
why not?
That's
why
pretty not? Much all the news we have. Don't have a lot of time, but we've got enough to maybe do one or two mails. Going to get you guys the usual spiel here, which is that if you have a question for the podcast here, you can get it to us in one of two ways. One is to go to our Discord. We have two channels there, one for patrons, one for non-patrons. Not that we don't love you non-patrons, but the patrons give us money and we give them first crack at the answers, questions and answers, because feel that we give them something for helping pay the bills and keeping us going. And everybody who is supporting us on Patreon right now, thank you so much. We love you. But you can go to the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel if you are a patron and leave a question, and we will look there and hopefully answer it. We'll at least try to. If you're not a patron, though, we still want to hear your questions. We still will look for it and answer them. Just going to look at the other guys first, just, you know, for that reason. But if you don't want to even deal with Discord for some reason, like, you know, you're like me and you're confused and scared by the advancing technology of a world that has moved on beyond you, you can go and use our email. That's podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch. So we know it's for this show. And the first question we've got is actually from the email. So, you know, another Luddite like me, woo, you're probably not, but well, I am. So, as a mainly Alliance player, I'm kind of miffed that one of our most iconic races is being shared with the Horde in the form of the neutral Earthen race without any reciprocity. I was thinking that neutral type of Tauren should also be introduced. Tauren are great. They're pro-environment, they look great in plate, and they run in time to Darun Sandstorm. my question is there any potential? Is there potentially any Tauren offshoot that would work as a neutral race? Costumosian, Lightforged Warlock. Joe?
I mean, I don't know that we've seen one that's truly neutral. Besides, I mean, the Tauren themselves started as relatively neutral until the Horde saved them. But there, we've established that there's the possibility of the fact that there could be Tauren everywhere in the world because they were a wandering race. Like that, they only recently, like when we started interacting with them, and really only at the beginning of World of Warcraft, did they really establish any sort of like home territory. Before then, if they weren't Yongol, which even Yongol sort of their existence, while they have an area that they live in when the steep's there, they're sort of nomadic as well. And Tauren could have easily traveled everywhere and have no association whatsoever with either faction yet to be found. I think it's perfectly possible. What they would look like, I don't know. That would really, really determine or be determined by like their environment. Because look at like the high mountain Tauren. They look like Tauren. They have different antlers because of their interactions with their ancestry with Holm. We have the Yongols. We have
antlers are cool.
What was the other the Tonka? The Tonka, yep, which is like Tonka.
They're the more bison-y looking, the more North American bison.
Which are relatively neutral to begin with. I don't think they really caught into one faction or another.
No, they joined the Horde. They straight up joined the Horde.
The Tonka joined the Horde?
Yep. It's one of the things you do as a Horde member in Wrath of Lich King is get the Tonka on board.
I wasn't playing Horde in Wrath. There could be others out there. We know that they ranged far and wide, and we could have more. So, yeah.
Liz, do you have an opinion?
I'm afraid I do not. Also, good. I've talked so much, so much.
I'm going to therefore take the opportunity to suggest my idea, which is that every single race should be available as a neutral option for either faction.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
And the reason I think this is because of all things, a little game called EverQuest used to let you do this. If EverQuest could figure it out in 1997, I feel like it's time that World of Warcraft borrow that idea or blatantly steal that idea. I don't care. Also, though, if you've seen the Amir Drasil, for lack of a better word, victory party, I don't know what else to call it.
Tea party!
Whenever like you wander around and there's like Jaina and Thrall talking about, you know, it's just like when we fought on Mount Hyjal and, you know, did you hear that weird voice? And you get Khadgar, who's like, I finally got to see the Horde and Alliance fight together against the common enemy. Like, I'm like, we've been doing that almost every other expansion, Khadgar. Have you really been drunk this whole time? Like, what's going on, buddy? But
time moves differently inside of the hallowed halls of Medivh, okay?
I just thought that time moved differently inside the giant globe that he keeps putting his head in and saying, yeah, I mean,
that too.
But at any rate, I find myself thinking, though, if we really want to make this idea of the Horde and Alliance actually working together, one of the things to do would be to allow people to play characters who are like, you know, over on the Horde side, even though they're human or whatever. And then you don't have to worry so much about, oh no, they've got our dwarf and they didn't give us anything back. Well, if actual Tauren were playable on the Alliance side, then who cares?
I want a buddy cop drama with a Tauren and a gnome just going.
And the gnome is the Riggs.
Yes.
And the Tauren is the Murtaugh.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Exactly. You get it.
I knew where you were going. But that's my thing. That's my theory, is that we're past the point where having races locked to a faction is good for the game. I think we are past that point. If it was ever good for me.
I mean, and the thing is, like, factions don't matter like they used to anymore. Like, you can still PvP, and like it mattered when there was like PvP in the world was like the thing to do, because at one point it was the thing to do. But it doesn't matter anymore in storytelling, really, and for players. Just let people play what they want with who they want.
I mean, I was thinking about it in terms, too, of, like, lore-wise, we've got the Forsaken reaching out to their human relatives now. The people that are still alive, that escaped Lordaeron, the people that were related to them, that were in other places at the time, they're reaching out. The humans are starting to reach back in some cases. And I thought, when I saw that in Before the Storm, I thought, oh man, Sylvanas is going to ruin this. But we're at a point now where Kalia Menethil is sitting on the throne or whatever of Lordaeron, or at least, you know, she's the unacknowledged ruler of the place. It's time. It's time to move to a place where if even the Forsaken and their human families can start to reconnect, then let's just let it happen. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine. And you could do it in all sorts of different ways. You could have it be like an embassy situation where your character who's over there is an ambassador. You could have it be like, you know, friendship associations, or like if elves decided they wanted to get to know other elves and learn like what their culture is like. And because now we've got Amir Drasil and we've got Bel-Ameth, there's a place for them to all go and hang out. But I've been pushing the all elf expansion for a long time, so I'll shut up with that. At any rate, I think that it's definitely time to move beyond having to have iconic races of either faction.
And besides, we can't have the all elf expansion. We kind of just had that. Now we got to do all gnomes.
See, the problem is there's not yet another gnome group, but it would be hilarious if the goblins found themselves dragged. Goblins technically, and who are the little people? The little doggy people? Like little jackal people.
Volpera,
thank you.
Volpera.
If the Volpera and goblins found themselves dragged into this just because they're short.
Or we find out that they were all from the same ancestry in the Titanforged.
Who knows? But yeah, that would be hilarious to me if you like to get a bunch of Volpera go, why are we here? Just because we fit in the door? That's why he made us come here? But yes, we need people who can get down in those tunnels.
And they're foxes, not jackals, by the way.
Okay, well, yeah, sir. That makes sense. That would be why the name makes, but regardless.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Next question. I think we got time for one more. This one's kind of long, though. I'm going to read it anyway. All right. This one's from UK Fletch. Question for Blizzard Watch. Hi, gang. Longtime listener. Short-time Patreon subscriber. Really should have done this way earlier, but never too late to start. In the last Blizzard Watch, I was interested to hear a discussion of how Microsoft may influence Blizzard going forward, bringing back old titles to Game Pass, etc., and the recent unexpected patch for Heroes of the Storm and the potential still left in StarCraft. On the run-up to BlizzCon this year, many of us discussed, joked, mourned about the state of StarCraft II, how Frost Giant are getting on with Stormgate and simmering nicely RTS scenes. No StarCraft at BlizzCon just confirmed the fears of many, but there's always hope, right? He's put Hopium in there, which is a reference to Copium and all that stuff. But in the same way that Blizz lost momentum after the release of Dota 2 and the then wandering around like lost sheep before HOTS appeared years too late, even with those sweet MS dollars, have they made the same mistake with StarCraft? And yet again, will it come back to bite them? Or is Phil Spencer about to enable SC3. He mentioned StarCraft more in 10 minutes at BlizzCon than Blizzard have done for years. I'm keen to hear your thoughts.
That's true.
Liz, you spoke, so now you have to keep going.
That's what happens. I volunteered to this. Yes, I think we're going to see more StarCraft due to the Microsoft involvement. Microsoft has talked specifically saying they aren't going to get in the way of Blizzard development, but they're going to support them. They're going to support Blizzard in doing what they want to do. But I think it's pretty clear that one of the things Microsoft is interested in is StarCraft.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, from the get-go on the big advertising campaign about the merger, on all of the blog posts, there are StarCraft images in there, and it's like, okay, do you remember the last StarCraft game? It's been a few years. Blizzard had said they aren't making any more, and yet you're still pushing this as a major part of the acquisition. Is, oh, hey, look, StarCraft, we're buying StarCraft. I think definitely Microsoft wants to do StarCraft, and this is a good time for more of these games. There are lots of similar games and developments. Frost Giant is putting out Stormgate. Do I have that name right?
I believe you are correct.
I think it's Stormgate. You know, that's coming out relatively soon.
Yeah.
And I mean, it looks like a good game, but it's also a little bit StarCraft with the serial numbers filed off. Like,
No. It's not that. It's StarCraft and Diablo.
Yeah.
Get into the Brundlefly machine. And that's not a problem for me, by the way. If anyone at Storm Giant is listening, Frost Giant, sorry. I don't mind that you've put StarCraft and Diablo in the Brundlefly machine. I'm fine with it. But you did.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a problem, but it's not. It does not feel like something that is reinventing the wheel, either gameplay-wise or narratively. It's something that's aiming to go out there and make a good RTS that's not I mean, it doesn't feel like it pushes the boundaries. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not trying to say that's a bad thing or the game is bad.
Yeah, but it also it's very hard to talk about it and act like it's not something you've seen before.
Yeah, and because it feels it's made by a bunch of previous StarCraft developers and it feels a lot like StarCraft. And I think there's room out there for more StarCraft. Blizzard used to be a real leader in this industry, and they could be again. They could go and make more of these games. They decided not to, and so now other people are making these games that are basically Blizzard games because they got rid of all the developers, and the developers started making more StarCraft games that they can't call StarCraft. Yeah, I think there's definitely hope for StarCraft with the Microsoft acquisition. I don't know that we're going to see it anytime soon, but there is hope.
Joe?
So I think it is not an accident that they keep mentioning StarCraft, and I think it's a trend that they're seeing in the industry. So things work in cycles very, very regularly, and for the longest time, fantasy was the dominant genre in gaming. Even up to now, most of the popular games are fantasy games. What is the one exception to that of recent releases that isn't a contemporary game? I'm excluding Spider-Man from this because whatever.
I mean, there's Cyberpunk 2077.
Literally Cyberpunk 2077.
There's Starfield, which whether or not you think it's a good game, was successful.
I'm getting to that. So Cyberpunk 2077 releases, and it's a sci-fi game, right? That's exactly what it is. It's a science fiction game. Then Starfield releases. It's a science fiction game. Both of these games are now doing relatively well, despite both of them having rather large problems at launch, or some people had problems with Starfield, some people didn't, whatever. But they're both well-received games right now. What other sci-fi major blockbuster games have really come out recently? There was another Armored Core game that we haven't seen in forever. The last time the last time Armored Core was popular, guess what was also popular? StarCraft II.
Yeah, sure enough. It's also interesting that Armored Core actually did get a really
good game.
Yeah, it got a good reception, even from people who don't like anything from software has ever done.
Because it's not a Dark Souls game, right?
No, but it's not a Dark Souls game. It's a completely different game of its own type.
But even then, like, the Dark Souls cycle is starting to dwindle down. The Elden Ring cycle, like, all that fantasy stuff is starting to maybe be oversaturated. Sci-fi is going to be a way forward to grab people's attention when you can say, hey, look, here's StarCraft back from the dead in a sea of fantasy games. It stands out. It's also something that is a world that got cut short, or a story that got cut short, in my opinion. And I know there's a lot of people that feel like that. We didn't get half the promised games or half the promised tie-in content for it, or half the promised books or comics and things like that. It's ripe for that. And I think the executives at Microsoft know that. And maybe without having Activision saying you have to produce a game every year now, they can go, is this a passion of yours? Do you want to do this? We'd be more than happy to do this. Or we have a studio under our umbrella, because this is the big benefit of having Microsoft. It doesn't necessarily have to be Blizzard that makes this game anymore. Microsoft can go, if you guys aren't going to do this, are you okay with this passionate group of people who really love the original StarCraft or really love RTSs, make a new game? And they can do that now. They can shop stuff around like Sony does, like a bunch of the other large boys do. There's potential. It just might not be. It might not be from Blizzard itself. At the root of the question, I don't think the time has passed. I think the time is coming. And I think RTSs in general, we're seeing a huge resurgence in them. I count Civ 7 in there because Civilization is an RTS to a certain degree. That's Civ 7's about to release, or at least we're going to get more information on it. I don't think it's about to release. But it was just announced not too long ago. If all these other developers that are producing RTS games, I think it would be a no-brainer to say, here's a group of people, go forth, make StarCraft.
Okay. I'm going to ask really quick. Do either of you know if that Horizon VR game ever came out?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was this year then, right? My problem with VR games is that a lot of really cool games...
Call the Mountain? Yeah.
Yeah, Call the Mountain. So at least the Horizon series is still trucking along, even though it keeps managing to come out at the same time as like a industry-dominating game that completely eclipses it. Good job! I don't know how you go to it, Guerrilla Games. I don't know how you do it. Do you have a psychic and then you just don't listen to the psychic? Is Cassandra working there? That's what I want to know. Not Cassandra of Sparta, although if she is, that'd be cool. Whatever. Do a game with her. Anyway, I have two things, and then I'm going to move on and we can wrap things up. My first one is that we're also kind of forgetting that one of the big places where RTS games are hugely popular right now is mobile gaming.
Oh, yeah.
And it could be that one of the things Microsoft is looking to do is leverage the StarCraft IP into the mobile space. Because we know Blizzard already has absorbed Vicarious Visions. They've already got people who are extremely good at adapting older games to new systems and hardware. And that might be something that once Microsoft, you know, completes the acquisition, they're now going to be working for Microsoft. The other thing I'm thinking about, though, is that every time we talk about them saying, you know, we're not going to pressure anybody, we just want to support you, I keep being reminded of, like, you know, we're just here to support you. Would you like to maybe make a StarCraft game? We would support that. Are you getting this? Is he stepping on my foot? Yes, he's trying to get you to understand what he's saying. He's saying make StarCraft. But he said he was going to just support us. And my foot. I mean, I guess we could make a StarCraft game. Yes. Yes, you could. I get that sense that Phil Spencer didn't go to BlizzCon just to show up. He wasn't there just to be friendly and say hi to the new Microsoft people.
Oh, no.
He was there to send a message to everybody.
That was calculated. That was 100% calculated.
And one of those messages is that they are going to be – I feel like Microsoft is saying we were going to be better shepherds of the amazing IPs that were now just picked up, because Activision had one that wasn't a Blizzard or King IP. It had Call of Duty or Modern Warfare. You know, I guess Modern Warfare is a Call of Duty, isn't it?
Yes, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare.
So they have that. And really, I mean, as much as I've loved some Activision games over the years, I mean, Pitfall, I still remember Pitfall fondly. I'd play Pitfall right now if I could. But I don't think that Activision has a ton of franchises. Like, they kept upsetting people and causing them to run off and start their own companies. Respawn wouldn't even exist if they hadn't been kind of jerks to them. And we wouldn't have had Titanfall and Titanfall 2, which would have made me sad.
If we're talking about Activision games, let's bring back, let's do another Transformers War for Cybertron. That was an Activision game.
Yeah, I covered last time that they could also make another Arcanum game if they wanted to.
Prototypes, but, Star Wars Jedi Knight, we can go on.
But regardless, I think what we're saying is that, yeah, it seems unlikely that Microsoft is willing to leave StarCraft on the table.
Yeah.
And not get something for
it's,
it. It's the very just, fact that they've been putting it on everything and talking about it constantly seems to indicate that we will get something, but we don't know what it will be.
Do you think Phil Spector was a Zerg Rush player?
Spencer? No, I don't know. Phil Spector, he's a different guy. We don't want to talk about him. That's my fault, but yeah.
You got Spencer, the bug in my head.
Spencer is,
or is he, I don't know. Or is he a Protoss Archon? I can't decide.
I think Zerg over Protoss. Almost everybody goes Zerg over Protoss except me. That's one of the reasons why when I play StarCraft, I'm always getting destroyed.
That was Terran.
Because it's Zerg. Terran's good, too.
Protoss here.
So, yeah, we've discovered that we're not a Zerg group. But, yeah, okay. Anybody have anything else to say on this before we move on to the outro?
No.
Joe, I'm stepping on your foot now.
Ow! Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Liz, by the way, for the list of stuff to discuss today, because you did that whole thing, and it was really good, and it ended up using up a good chunk of this show. So
there's so much stuff.
Yeah. So thank you, and thank you to everybody who's listening for doing that, because otherwise it would just be us talking in a channel for an hour. And I mean, we can do that, but it's not a podcast.
We can, and we do. We talk every day.
But this has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here with us, and we will be back next week.